that's a great way to show a tax preparer you do something different, that you're adding value to your client. Even if you think you know the answer, when you're getting to kind of an out of the ordinary transaction for a client and you know who their tax preparer is, which that should be in your CRM. If you don't know the tax preparers for all of your clients, you need to ask in your next client meeting.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial services can do, that the term financial advisor actually could clear the room at a dinner party. What was this? What was the gap between consumers of financial services and providers of financial services? That's why in this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and providing tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. As providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with our future clients to help them change their family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole to do less harm and more good. And in today's conversation, we talk to Stephen Jarvis about how advisors can deliver massive value to their clients through tax planning. Steven is a tax nerd, but he's so cool. He's the CEO of Retirement Tax Services, and we had a great conversation, a lot of extras in this conversation, by the way, as we go through all the different ways that you can deliver value as a financial professional, interacting with your clients, uncovering the problems and providing solutions, giving some tidbits on how you can interact with the IRS, the five things you can review on every client's tax return to add value. So much in this episode, and I know you're going to really enjoy it. So sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Stephen Jarvis. You are a CPA. You are a co-founder and CEO at the Retirement Tax Services, where you aim to bridge the gap between tax professionals, financial advisors, and their mutual clients to help reduce most people's largest expense in retirement, taxes. You have over 10 years of experience from top accounting firms and have partnered with some of the most successful financial advisors in the industry, allowing you to be uniquely positioned to help financial advisors deliver massive value to their clients and stay between the lines on compliance, which is super important. You're also a host of the Retirement Tax Services podcast, where you utilize the valuable skill of distilling endless pages of IRS tax code and case law into easy to explain actionable items that financial advisors can use with their clients. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Well, thanks, Dominique. I'm so excited to be here. Yeah. It's always nice to start your morning with someone giving you such a great introduction. It just makes me feel so good to hear all those things all at once.
It's so funny. I've had these conversations before, and I remember I was on the other end. I was on someone's podcast. Matter of fact, it was Andy Andrews, one of my favorite authors. And he was like, let me just read your bio. And when he finished, I was like, who's that guy? I mean, I was like, sometimes it's refreshing to hear that. And so, no, I totally get where you're coming from. No problem at all. How has it been? We met each other before FinCon, but we connected at FinCon, had tacos with some other financial nerds. And it was great meeting you. How have things been since we last talked?
Things have been great since FinCon. I've been to a couple of other advisor conferences that I've spoken at. Actually, the week after FinCon, the conference I was at, we filled the room. There was people who stood through the entire session, which I take as a particular point of pride since my topic is taxes. And people not only came, but stood for the entire hour so they could ask questions and get more information.
Cool. Well, that's cool, man. I mean, this topic is one that I think over the years, this is my 20th year in the industry. The last half of those 20, I've spent client facing. And this is a pain point that has come up in every, and when I say every, I'm not speaking lightly about that. Every client case that I've talked about or worked with has had the issue of taxes. They've had to deal with it. They've had to question it. They've had to do something with it because it's staring everybody in the face. And, you know, as we kind of think about shaping the next generation of financial advice, this is something that all financial professionals are going to have to deal with. So I'm glad to have this discussion with you and maybe bring out some, you know, some strategies and some things to think about when people are planning going forward. So I'm ready to dive in. How about you?
Yeah, let's do it.
So let's just kind of look at the topic of taxes, right? So why don't people embrace this fully? And how did you come to embrace this? Because like not only do you have people standing through tax presentations, you obviously love this in order to bring it across in such a way that keeps people engaged. So talk about maybe how Stephen Jarvis became a tax nerd and then maybe why you see other people not embracing this as maybe as much as a tax nerd like yourself.
Yeah, so I'm sure most of your listeners can list plenty of reasons why people don't embrace it, right? I mean, tax is kind of this big, scary thing. The tax code is endlessly long. It's really complicated. None of it makes any sense, you know, because the rules aren't even written by accountants. They're written by Congress. And as much as people like to think that income tax laws are about generating income, they're not. They're about driving behavior, whether that's trying to get you to buy a house or trying to get you to vote for someone. Just assume that every tax law is really meant to be about behavior, not revenue, and you can skip over why it doesn't make any sense. So for me, the reason I kind of nerd out on taxes is really more because of the impact it has on people as opposed to any particular love I have for taxes itself. I happen to be good with numbers. People give me way too much credit for being good at math because I'm a CPA, but really I'm just good at really simple math applied in strange ways. That's what it comes down to.
Got
but
it.
The part I really nerd out on is how impactful it can be on individuals. And we all have to pay taxes. And so this is kind of universally applicable. And I mean, to your point that you just made of every situation you come across has some sort of tax implication. You know, I try to get that across to advisors early and often that, hey, everything you do is going to have a tax implication. In fact, my team's publishing an article I wrote today that has this big graphic in it of all the things you do as an advisor that have tax implications, and it has a massive list because there are lots of things you do. And then it says, okay, here's the list of things you do that don't have a tax implication, and it's a blank list.
You're right. When I think about just, you know, just parenthetically here on that point, when I think about the CFP curriculum and all the different things that we go through to earn these marks, and, you know, you think about retirement income planning, education planning, the estate planning, you know, all the different modules they take you through, and interwoven in every single one of those is tax. It's some relation on how, you know, either you can maybe push income to above the line or it has to go below the line, you know, when we're talking about AGI and stuff. So you're right. There's not really too much planning that we do that, you know, kind of leaves us out of that loophole. Let me ask you this, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, because I got one of these stupid notices. Well, let me not say stupid. I got one of those IRS notices in the mail. And you probably are familiar with this. Like, they're on a super backlog right now because of COVID and whatnot. And so they are incredibly difficult to actually get a person on the phone. And so you have to, you know, kind of basically, you know, correspond them through carrier pigeon because it's like no point in doing anything else. But I guess my point is, what are some pointers or some maybe tips on dealing with, and maybe I'm asking this selfishly, but with dealing with the IRS, when you do see a tax notice, because this is something that, you know, you can't avoid. No matter how many T's you cross and I's you dot, you're likely to get some type of form of tax notice during your working years on, you know, on your filings. Any pointers there?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first really important clarification is that they're nasty grams. That's my official word for them. That's nice. You do not want to call them stupid. That might be accurate, but I call them nasty grams. And yeah, getting those nasty grams from the IRS, I mean, honestly, is terrifying because when they come in the mail, the IRS is using a font from like 40 years ago. It looks like somebody is like 80 years old and hunting and pecking on a typewriter that says, "You are going to jail." Like, that's not what it says, but that's how people read it. I've got them for me personally, and not just the ones I've seen for clients. And it's a little terrifying. No, nobody gets excited to see IRS on an envelope like that.
Well, and they're so cryptic. They don't even tell you what you need to do. There's like, am I supposed to do something? Or like, you don't know. So yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Let's go.
Yeah, so this is a great point for advisors working with clients. This is a great point of why continually working on tax education with your clients can be so valuable to them. Because I love taxes because there's lots of opportunities to quantify how we're impacting a client's life. And taxes are exponentially more emotional than money in general.
Ooh, so unpack that. I love that.
Your clients are going to give me way more credit for saving them $1,000 in taxes than they're going to give to you for $10,000 in investment returns. I don't know why that is. I'm not a psychologist, but it's true over and over again. Anecdotally, at least, clients will come back and talk about, oh, my advisor, my CPA, whoever it is, saved me this $1,000 in taxes. Because to them, that's real. It's tangible. Even if they don't understand how the tax strategy worked, they understand, hey, that's not in my taxes anymore. I don't have to send that check to Aunt Iris.
Ooh, so wait a minute. Did you say Aunt Iris? I love that.
I did say Aunt Iris, yeah.
I love that. Let me interrupt for just a second because people probably wouldn't know that we were having so much fun with the tax conversation. But so you just said something that I think I want to underscore, and I don't want financial professionals to miss, is the psychology attached to the client with saving $1,000 for taxes and 10 times that amount being generated in investment terms, whether, you know, paper or not. I think that needs to be underscored because so many financial professionals shy away from this planning point. And, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think they view it correctly. But you're saying there's a tremendous, I think, value add for the financial professional that embraces this and adds that to the repertoire of things that you give or deliver to a client. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I feel really strongly on that one. I haven't done a double-blind study in a peer-reviewed journal to prove the statistics on that. But from my own experience and from every advisor I talk to, that's where clients really laser in on and see more value. Of course, they want the investment returns. They want you to help them save for retirement, accomplish their goals, you know, get to their why, whatever it is. But there's just something about saving money on taxes that really resonates with people. And now, selfishly for advisors, this is great too, because it's something people are much more willing to share with their friends, because people are less likely to go to a dinner party or the next, you know, sporting event and brag about their investment returns because they don't want to talk about their stock accounts. But man, if you got somebody a bigger refund or you help them save on taxes, everyone likes to talk about how they didn't have to write that check to Aunt Iris.
No, you're right. So this is that's just kind of like a bonus point. I don't even know you're going to bring that out. So everybody that's listening, make sure you write that down, because I think that's huge to be thinking about. So let's talk about uncovering some of these problems and providing solutions. Like, when we think about that list that you talked about earlier of all the things that an advisor does that intersects tax planning, what are maybe some things on that list that come top of mind that financial professionals could be thinking about when it comes to adding value to the client relationship?
Yeah, and just real quick, so I don't feel too much like I dodged your question on how you help people with the nasty grams. The reason I brought up the psychology is that one of the best things you can do on that topic is to let your clients know that that's a possibility, that there are times that this comes up. So let's tie this into your current question. So one of the things on that list is, okay, let's talk about working with clients on like qualified charitable distributions, right? This comes up in financial planning all the time, but huge tax implications. That's why we're doing it, is for the tax purposes, to offset or completely eliminate an RMD, or be able to get those charitable contributions directly below the line instead of going into our adjusted gross income. But this is a huge area that can create mismatch letters with the IRS, because the IRS has not given custodians a good way to report QCDs. So I have a client that I'm working with. We call all of our clients Bob and Sue. So I'm working with Bob and Sue. We get them a checkbook from their IRA so that they can write checks to charity to do qualified charitable distributions. They write a check to their favorite charity for $10,000. that comes out of their account. The custodian says, great, $10,000 came out of their account. This goes on a 1099-R, and it gets reported as a taxable distribution because there's no other option. So now this 1099-R with a $10,000 taxable distribution goes to the tax preparer who is getting it in February or March and is trying to get through 1,000 returns in 6 weeks. And they're not thinking, hey, is this maybe a QCD? They're saying, hey, it says 10,000. Let's put it on the return. And maybe they get it right. Maybe you're an amazing advisor and you proactively told the tax preparer, hey, this is coming. Be on the lookout for it. Great thing to do to build relationships with tax preparers. So maybe we get it right and now we've reported it as not taxable. So in the IRS's system, they have a 1099 that says 10 grand taxable, and they have a 1040 that says that's not anywhere on here. And they don't even have to audit you. They send you a mismatch letter, which that's under the topic of nasty grams.
Yeah.
And so if you work with a client on a QCD, every single time you should be saying, hey, Bob and Sue, just so you know, sometimes the IRS's system doesn't work the way it should, and you might get a letter that says there's an issue. Now, these happen quite often, and quite often they are wrong. But if you get that, just let me know. I'll help you take care of it. So that way, when they get that letter in the mail, they're not scared. They're not surprised. They said, oh, Dominique said he'd take care of that for me. So like, let me just call him and we'll get this resolved. And now they're not terrified by this 40-year-old font that is coming off of a typewriter.
Because the font is, it is scary. I would agree. It is scary. I love that. I love that. I actually use a software that allows me to prepare every year a tax prep letter. So it has, hey, you made these type of contributions or a QCD. This is what you need to, along with all your other tax documents, hand over to your tax preparer, kind of almost like as a cover sheet. So like the tax preparer can kind of be aware of those things and not make those flub ups. Real quick story. I have a client that I've been working with for about 5 years now. And although I did all my due diligence to try to report something very similar where, you know, covered positions and uncovered positions at the custodian, where, you know, the position came over from another custodian, the cost basis isn't there. So we liquidate the position and it looks like there's zero cost basis. And I gave the PDF version and the spreadsheet version that had the original cost basis in there. And what do you know, the tax preparer just looked at the PDF and not the spreadsheet. And therefore there was no cost basis on something like there was $100,000. So that was actually pretty significant. It was like a $100,000 mistake. And when I went through the tax return, I noticed it. The story ends well in that after 12 months, we finally got that money back from the IRS. But the point is when they're going through 1,000 returns, the tax preparer it's not their responsibility, is the point I'm making here, in order for you to care for your client. It's the advisor's responsibility to care for the client and watch for those particular mistakes.
Yeah. And, you know, as a CPA myself, I definitely wish there were situations like that where the tax preparer would take more responsibility, but just kind of the model doesn't really allow them the time to do that. But regardless, as we all look at ourselves, we need to look for where can I improve the situation. So yeah. I love that you use that year in tax planning letter. That's something we work with all the members of our community. We give them a template to say, hey, you should really go through, list all of your clients' accounts, and list, are they getting a 1099 or not? Were there any special things that happened this year? Was there an account that was closed? Was there a QCD? Was there a Roth conversion? Some of these out of the ordinary things and I would try to keep it to one page so people actually read it. We send it to the client so that the client can just hand it to the tax preparer. You want to write it for both of them. Don't make this hard on your client.
Yeah. I didn't know that we were going to provide so much practice management value in this one. We might have to charge for this episode. I mean, we can split it 50-50.
Yeah, let's do. Actually, you know, you asked me why I do this. Part of the thing that I always focus on is how do we do this in practice? Because you can go Google all these tax strategies and find headlines for days. I don't actually have a proprietary tax planning strategy that no one's ever heard of. What I do have is this experience and kind of this inner circle of advisors who are doing this in practice right now today. Not that they were doing it 10 years ago and hope that their strategies still work, but we're totally focused on what actually makes a difference when you sit down with Bob and Sue or when you call Sarah the CPA and try to go through these things. You mentioned looking at the, you know, reviewing the return and catching that. One of the things that we encourage advisors to do. And then as we are getting ready to start doing tax preparation with the advisors in our community, that we're going to give them the opportunity to do is review draft returns before we file them. So that a week before we file a return for an advisor's client, we say, hey, you know, Miss Advisor, here's Bob and Sue's return. Please take a look through this and let us know if there's anything we should change before we finalize it. Because you already mentioned the IRS is backlogged 4 months. And if it gets done wrong and you catch it afterwards, that's still important. But yeah, 12 months, that might be generous to say it's going to take 12 months to get something amended and fixed. Yeah. So if you can establish these relationships and look at draft returns before they're finalized, that would be ideal.
What's the first step in becoming a successful financial professional? Well, doing your homework. And there's no better place to understand the financial services industry than Jumpstart University. With video after video of hours and hours of content on topics like the different careers available in financial services, advice for making the switch as a career changer, what to consider when becoming an independent financial professional, how to attract and retain new clients, what's involved in becoming a certified financial planner, and day in the life of a financial advisor, with so much more. All of this for free. You just got to click through the YouTube ads. So head on over to YouTube now to check out Jumpstart YO University. You can find that at youtube.com/JumpstartYO University. Now, let's get back to the conversation. As you're talking, I'm just kind of going through my process and going, okay, I know what I'm going to be doing, end of November. adding to the process that I have to shore it up and make it better. As we're there, just any other tips on, providing additional value for clients since we're already there? I think this kind of falls into the lap of the next question I was going to ask you is like, whether we want to admit it or not, by trade as a financial professional, especially one that's a planner or an advisor, you are already doing tax planning, whether you want to call it that or not. Let's talk about how we can embrace it more, right? And talk about how we can provide value more.
Yeah, that article I mentioned with those two graphics in it, that's basically what the headline is that all advisors are doing tax planning. Some are just intentional about it. And just not everyone's going to like this next statement, but I get that most everyone listening to this has some sort of disclaimer around taxes, that this isn't official tax advice, or you need to go talk to a CPA or whatever it is based on whether you're at a wirehouse or an RIA. That disclaimer isn't actually doing your clients any good. I understand that you have to include it, but I work with lots of CPAs. None of them have stories about a client coming to them and saying, hey, my advisor said I should come check with you. They're intimidated. They're not going and actually doing that. You think that you're giving yourself this free pass on compliance, but what you're doing is reducing the value that your client gets.
And I would say increasing liability too.
Yeah, we want to work in tandem with other professionals. There are certainly times where you should involve other tax professionals, but be part of the process. Help make the introduction. Make sure that the information is shared accurately. Make sure you're reviewing to make sure it got reported correctly. And so don't take this, oh, well, I gave my disclaimer, so I'm fine. Because if you want to really deliver value to your clients, you're going to help make sure they get the right answer. Because I work with advisors who are hesitant to get into taxes because it is big and scary. It's this black box that no one really understands. But especially if you focus on a narrow set of clients, it can be a lot easier to say, okay, here's the 5 tax topics that come up most often for my clients. I need to get really familiar with those. I don't need to understand everything. Maybe I don't need to get lost in international tax or whatever it might be. Start with 5 things. What are the 5 things that come up most often with my clients? And let me get really good at finding the answers. Not necessarily having the answers. Your clients can come to you. You can say, hey, listen, I do tax planning. They come and say, here's my tax question. It's perfectly acceptable to say, you know what, Bob and Sue, that is a great question. I could give you a back of the napkin answer, but I want to make sure that I'm always giving you my best work. Would it be all right if I looked into this, contacted a tax professional, and then got back to you by next Tuesday, and we'll have a plan for moving forward? Your client's never going to fault you for that.
No, I would agree. I think, it's kind of woven into the fabric of the profession to be the know-it-all, right? Like, to when somebody asks you a question, you kind of feel like you know, maybe because of your business model or whatever, you kind of feel like you're compelled to give them an answer right then. But I love the way you just said, you know, allow some margin, allow some space. I mean, you're human, and I think your clients realize that, and especially if you've been, you know, forthright from the beginning in the relationship to just be transparent about, I may not know everything. But you know, the reason I am your advisor is because you get to lean on me and leverage me to go get those answers versus you having to spend your valuable time, trying to track down those answers. Cause yeah, like you said, you know, we can Google everything nowadays. But is it worth the time to do that? I think you bring up a good point, just to kind of segue into the last part of this, in developing a specialty. You said a couple of things that I want you to unpack is, you know, this relationship that, you know, advisors should be building with tax professionals, CPAs. You know, we call them centers of influence. And I know, you know, for as long as I've been in the business, there's always been this like somewhat of a stigma inside of in our world, in our universe, that, you know, CPAs don't really like to refer clients to us because of this, that, and the other. First of all, I want you to just either, you know, kind of unpack that. I know you've heard it before, and maybe give some rationale behind it before we move forward. Just because, like, as a CPA, like, how do you feel about this particular thing?
Yeah, I feel kind of almost obligated to give a shout out to my enrolled agent friends. CPA somehow became synonymous with tax preparer. Mm. And really, it can be really important to find somebody with a credential, but that should be the starting place, not really how you make your decision, especially on taxes. A lot of times enrolled agents spend more time on taxes than CPAs do. Yeah. They're both great designations. Find someone with the experience with your type of clients. So that's my shout out for all my enrolled agent friends out there.
No, I'm glad you said that. I don't want to forget them because if one thing that the CFP study taught me is there's three people that can represent you in front of the IRS. It's a tax attorney, it's a CPA, and an EA. And yeah, if you notice, there's no CFP behind any of those. So, good point.
Yeah. So more to your actual question. Tax preparers don't want to refer financial advisors clients. It, as a general rule, that probably applies to in the high 90% of tax preparers. And there's several reasons for it. Some of them are perception and some of them are probably closer to reality. But in general, tax preparers see themselves as filling a necessary and required role in their client's life. Now, I know that many advisors feel that way as well, but consumers tend to more see the tax preparer side of it. I have to file taxes every year. Everyone knows that. Not everyone has really embraced the fact that working with a financial advisor is something they need. There's also still a lot of misconceptions about what financial advisors do. That's not a very well-defined term by anyone. And so it's really, especially if a tax preparer has had one or two bad experiences where they know an advisor who showed up at some chamber of commerce meeting to get referrals from centers of influence, and all they wanted to do was talk about insurance. And there's a place for insurance, but advisors can feel very salesy to the compliance focused nerds in the room. And so a tax preparer sits there and says, okay, I'm feeling this requirement. Advisors are providing a luxury. Again, right or wrong, that's kind of how they see it. Mm. And so when you come and ask a tax preparer for a referral, they have no reason to give you a referral. You have done nothing to show them that you are going to treat their clients well and provide value to your clients. I was talking to a CPA recently that I know that he said that over the course of his career, he's been at this like 20 years now, he's had dozens and dozens of advisors come to him and ask for referrals. Some of them he's related to, only one of which he has ever given a referral to. Wow. And the only reason there is one that he's given a referral to is because that advisor came to him not looking for referrals. The advisor came to him and said, hey, listen, I've got this really unique situation and it's kind of urgent. I think it included a death in the family or something like that. There's some big life event. And the advisor came and just said, hey, I need help on this. And I want to make sure that the client gets the right answer. And can you help with this? At no point was there by the way, we serve the same type of clients, so you should send me all your clients. Who are the top five people you know? Like, none of that. It was this genuine, I want to make sure this client is served. And along the way, the advisor was showing the tax preparer, here are the things I do to take care of my clients, including identifying when I need outside help. And so through that process, the tax preparer said, okay, here's someone who takes care of their clients. If someone comes along who needs a financial advisor, that's who I'm going to tell him to work with. And that's still the only advisor he ever sends referrals to. And so for advisors, the takeaway from this is you don't need to find more ways to get in front of centers of influence to ask for referrals. You need to find more ways to get in front of them to demonstrate how you deliver value to your clients. In fact, I recommend that advisors never, ever, 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 never, ever ask for referrals. Focus on learning from experts in their field, screening potential referral sources for your clients, for you to send referrals to, and then demonstrating how it is that you deliver value to your clients.
Ooh, okay. So I have to pause here because this is very salacious, because this flies in the this flies against so many frameworks that I've heard in the industry over my 20 years. Let me be clear here. You're saying never, ever, 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 never ask for referrals, period, or to centers of influence?
Oh, well, I would say in general, asking for referrals is almost never how you get them, whether that's from clients or friends or centers of influence. Because even here's something, Retirement Tax Services, I started in collaboration with two other financial advisors so that we are getting this perspective of what works with a client. So Matt Jarvis and Michael Shalansky, they're the founders of the Perfect RIA. They work with a lot of advisors. So one of the things that they share around asking clients for referrals is, okay, it's not that you're asking them for referrals. It's that you're taking opportunities to let them know, one, that you're growing so that they know, hey, they can take on new clients, and then letting them know what the process looks like if they were to refer a friend. Because that both for your clients and for a center of influence, the one of the biggest hesitations for them is what happens like immediately. If I take my Bob and Sue and send them to you, what's going to happen when they call? Are you going to immediately start selling them something? Are you going to drag them through a bunch of meetings that I'm not sure what happens in them? When are you going to start charging them? How do you try? I don't know any of these things. And it's the same for your clients. Another recommendation that they give out a lot at the Perfect RIA is to not ask your clients, same with centers of influence, don't ask other people to screen your potential clients for you. So, right, because that can be really uncomfortable, especially if you have certain types of clients you work with that need certain income levels or asset levels. Don't ask other people to screen your potential clients. Make sure that's included in your prospecting process and just demonstrate to those other people that you would like referrals from how you deliver value.
No, I love that. I think, and so I want to clarify, because I think this notion around asking referrals too, based on the context of what you just said and the clarity by which you spoke, this is something that needs to be changed in the industry. Like asking for referrals, and me and my wife actually, we were talking about this the other day. It's like, you know, first of all, there's people in your, and this is another bonus section for everybody that's listening, because this is not on the agenda. Like we're just like really, really vibing here. So for, you know, let's say you have 100 clients. There's going to be a percentage of those people that are open to the prospect of sharing their network with you so that you can be introducing, your business can grow. And I think there's a lot of impediments on the advisor side, to be quite honest, that impede those clients from introducing you to those people. It could be they don't know what you do. It could be that they don't know what the process is. It could be a lot of the things, some of the stuff that you named already. And so I would totally flip that and agree with you that this notion around asking for referrals, whether they're center of influences or from your existing clients, needs to be repositioned or renamed to, you know, positioning yourself for an introduction, really, is really what you're asking the clients to do.
Yeah. Well, and let's leave financial services aside for a second. Think about other areas in your life where you get asked for referrals, and how often do you give referrals? Because for me, it's basically never. Right? Like I've bought a car, I've bought a house, I've worked with lots of different types of salespeople, most of whom have asked me for referrals, and I never give them, because you're there at that point, they're asking me to make all these decisions about my friends. and asking me to volunteer their contact information in my mind to get bothered by someone else. So if you ask me for five people I might know who are interested in buying a car, I'm giving you zero. Like, no, like maybe if I'm having a snarky day, maybe I start making up some names on there. I'm not giving you my friends and family names. No, not a chance. So why would that suddenly magically be different when we talk about financial planning? For most people, they see buying a car as more of a need than having a financial plan. Again, whether that's right or wrong, but if I'm not willing to refer my friends to a car dealership, why am I going to refer them to a financial advisor just because they asked me? Now, no. If instead I've gone somewhere and had an incredible experience, that I went and I just thoroughly appreciated and felt respected and saw value in everything I did. And then they just let me know, hey, you know what? We're growing. We're open to other ideas. And they haven't asked me for, hey, what are the cell phone numbers of your five biggest friends? Then that's in my head. And the next time I'm talking to my friends and they say, you know what? I probably need a new car. Like, wow, this dealership down the road, I had such an incredible experience there.
Yep.
That's how referrals actually happen in my life. It's when I had an incredible experience and then it comes up. It's not because somebody asked me for them.
No, I think and that's exactly what I was about to say before I interrupted you, is that I was thinking the same thing, is advisors need to concentrate on creating a referable experience versus asking for the referral. Because you're right. When you have a great meal at a great restaurant or whatever, you know, like me and my wife go 4 hours from our house to drink wine in a place in Texas. And whenever somebody talks about wine, I go, man, you really need to go to this place, because I have such a great experience every time I go. But they've never asked me to share their winery with any of their friends. I just have a great experience and I want to share it with people. So I think you're right in that it works exactly the same way, and we just need to reframe it. And the onus is on us as financial professionals, if we haven't gotten referrals or our clients feel uncomfortable with referring us, because we probably haven't created a referable experience. So I love that.
Yeah. So let's bring this back to taxes for a second, because that is where I spend most of my time. So let's talk about some ways that you can do that through taxes, because taxes is such a great way into a person's life because they know it's a necessity. So you already mentioned having a year-end tax planning letter. That's a great way to show a tax preparer you do something different, that you're adding value to your client. Even if you think you know the answer, when you're getting to kind of an out of the ordinary transaction for a client and you know who their tax preparer is, which that should be in your CRM. If you don't know the tax preparers for all of your clients, you need to ask in your next client meeting. But when that comes up, make sure the client's okay with it. Send an email or call the tax preparer and say, hey, you know, we've got this shared client. We're about to work on this strategy together. I always want to make sure I'm learning the best ways to do this. I'd love to pay for an hour of your time to hear what works well, what I can do to make this process easier. And I did intentionally in there say, I would like to pay for an hour of your time, because that's another huge way to set yourself apart from every other advisor and immediately get more respect from that tax preparer. And really, they spend more time on taxes than you. So even if they never give you a referral, you're probably going to get some valuable information out of them. And if you have to pay their $200, $250, $300 an hour, that's probably money well spent.
Yeah, I would agree. That, I mean, you're dropping a lot of gems for aspiring as well as existing financial professionals, because I think this is a part of the business that people just don't do well. I've seen it for so many years, advisors complaining and struggling and all these kind of things. But I think just the idea of coming to the table with the notion of how can I serve you, and you're thinking about your client. Of course, that means any other professionals that they use, we share a client. How can I serve this client better? And if it means me investing some of my time and money in order to do that, then that's what we need to be willing to do. That's excellent. I love that. So let me say this as we bring this into the landing. This podcast is designed to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client, their ideal client at the next level. In that context, Stephen, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with them?
You have to start and you have to keep practicing. Right. Taxes are incredibly daunting. Like, I get that. Like, I'm not trying to make light of that. But the taxes aren't going away, and they aren't getting simpler. Congress likes to prove over and over again that tax law is written in pencil. this is only going to get more complicated. So don't sit there and say, oh, well, there's advisors with 10 years of experience or 20 years of experience on me. That's true in any area of planning. Get started. Start, and really, I recommend you start with reviewing tax returns. We didn't really talk about it today, but you should be getting a tax return and going through it for every single one of your clients every single year. And if you're not sure how to do that, find resources. There are good resources out there. Of course, I'm biased to the resources that my team puts out, but there are a lot of great resources that if you'll take the time and understand that this isn't a small commitment, but it's a huge value add to your clients and to your business.
Yeah, we'll definitely link some of the stuff from your website and some of the stuff that you wrote in the show notes, because I think talking to you today and the stuff I've read about you online, I know that you guys know your stuff over there. And I think my audience would be well served to peruse some of your stuff and maybe even take you up on some of your services.
Yeah. And the Retirement Tax Services podcast is one of our public facing content sources it's all advisor focused. It's all, how do we actually do this in practice? So depending on how much you want to bite off right at the beginning, there are lots of resources available.
Cool. Man, this has been a pleasure. I feel like we can go on for probably a whole nother hour, but I'm going to respect your time and we'll put a pin in it. Great talking today, Stephen, and I wish you the best in the future, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, talk to you later. Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now until our next conversation.